Okay, we are in Job chapter 3. We've just read verses 1 through 10, starting in verse 11. Why did I not die at birth, come out from the womb and expire? Why did the knees receive me, or why the breasts that I should nurse? For then I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept, then I would have been at rest. With kings and counselors of the earth, who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, or who filled their houses with silver? Or why was I not as a hidden stillborn child, as infants who never see the light? There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners are at ease together. They hear not the voice of the taskmaster. The small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Why is light given to him who is in misery, and life to the bitter in soul, who long for death, but it comes not, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures, who rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they find the grave? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For my sighing comes instead of my bread, and my groanings are poured out like water. For the thing that I fear comes upon me, and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, but trouble comes. So imagine that, we'll pick on Sean a little bit. Imagine Sean is going through a really rough stretch in his life. And you rearrange your schedule to come be with him, to comfort him and to try to help him through this trial he's going through. And then after 7 days of no speaking, Sean opens his mouth and he says this. I mean, this is the guy who's been preaching here. He's been your Bible class teacher. How would you feel if when he opens his mouth, he says this? I wish I had never been born. I wish God was not searching for me. You think that might be a little bit shocking? Maybe against his character and all that you've come to know about Sean over the last few years? What might your reactions be if you heard him say something like that? Anything? Yeah, Kelly?
I think an immediate tendency is what I'll try to make. People think that the situation is not as bad as they've done. If I try to remind him of all the good he's done, remind him of all the souls he's reached in his preaching, in his example, you know, that wasn't for naught.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because Eliphaz is going to do that, right? He's going to remind him. What else comes to mind? I mean, maybe. Oh yeah, go ahead, Kelton. Yeah. Yeah, just ask him why. Even though it's probably apparent why, but maybe your question leads more to, are you overreacting a little bit? I mean, even in the context of your deep suffering, are you overreacting here a little bit? Any other thoughts? Is there any chance, whether right or wrong, you might feel indignant? Like, hold on a minute. This guy, okay, I know you're going through it, but that's more than a little bit hypocritical. Right? I mean, you've been this teacher this whole time, and now you're saying all these things that'd be better if God had never even let you out to be alive? Maybe there's some indignation there a little bit. This doesn't sound like the God that I know. Anything else? Yeah, Joel.
Well, I would just say a situation like this where someone has lost everything, they've lost their family. I think we've all known people that at times, whether it's been us or someone else, they've just had a rash of whether it's people in their family or not. Whatever it is, they've just gone through a string. You look at that person, you feel sorry for them, and they've gone through a string of just really bad times. And you wonder, you know, man, that's really hard on them. I think Job is that example to the extreme. So I really think if it was me looking at Job, I would understand why he's saying this. I mean, think about it realistically. If you lost everything, you lost your family, you were now at the point of death, I don't know that I would react any differently. I don't know what to say to Job, but I definitely understand why he feels the way he does. I think it's really difficult to make a practical application. If I knew someone in 2020 that was going through what Job was going through, and try to put myself in that situation, I would kind of understand why he feels the way he does.
You're a better man than me. I would struggle with this. I mean, I would really struggle with the hopelessness aspect of it. I mean, I would wonder, like, Job, why not say something like, this will pass eventually. This is awful. But eventually it will be over and I will be at home with my father. Because I've been faithful to him. I mean, obviously Job, he maintained his integrity. Right? So isn't there just some like seeming hypocrisy here? I mean, if you're looking at it from the perspective, like, I mean, if I were looking at it from the perspective of Job's friends, it just seems like there's some hypocrisy. It's like, if this is where you're at when trials come, then what was all that other stuff before you were tried? What was that for? Because you're throwing everything out now. Right? Why are you throwing everything out? Yeah, Billy? Yeah, and I think I can get with both of what you guys are saying on the perspective of I see the wisdom in keeping your mouth shut and to try to let him talk and maybe help him through it. But it would be difficult for me to accept this answer. Just kind of coming out of nowhere, right? And there would be a sense, if I'm being totally honest, too, of like, I've been sitting with you for 7 days and this is what we get? Just how I feel. Yeah, John?
I have a pretty good feeling that previous cultures didn't struggle with this as much. I think we struggle with it a lot more because we have a lot of distractions around us. It's easier to, you know, turn to our phones and turn on YouTube or Facebook or whatever else. But I think in general, we're just not good at sitting with people in their junk. Like, it makes us uncomfortable. And I mean, I don't know that I can disagree with either of you, but I take the opposite side. I mean, because I see it. I've been in those situations where it starts out as a well-meaning thing, right? Where we're trying to offer encouragement, maybe, but then they say something that almost kind of just triggers something in us that makes us think, okay, well, wait, what about? And then we start talking about that, and then it goes into further things, and then next thing you know, you turn around and you're in a full-blown like argument with this person who just had a really hard time. I mean, I've been that person, right? So the struggle for me is that I think we're just not good at feeling discomfort, whatever that may be. And I think in this this situation, trying to encourage somebody who's been in this kind of an awful situation. I mean, there's like, I think the whole point of Job is to show us this is the worst of the worst that could happen. I think this is almost kind of like a case study for us to be, and I think we need to keep that in mind.
No, appreciate your thoughts on that. Sean, you had something else too?
I guess my genuine question is, are we sure that what he's saying is wrong?
Mm-hmm, right.
That's kind of what I'm interested in right now. Because, like, having known you, it's weird whenever you use one of us as an example, it hits home, but then there's the theory talk, and then, like, I know you, and I think that given your experience and as trials continue to accumulate, that if you heard me say this, you probably wouldn't say anything. And you just sit down. Because this is just a feeling that I'm having. You know what I mean? And Job's not the only one to have this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a genuine question that I'm having. Are we saying that what you said was wrong? Are we simply saying a guy is going, you know what? One way that I wouldn't feel this is if I was never born. And I kind of wish that I just didn't have to endure this trial. And I don't think God is calling for us not to feel that way. But what we're ultimately going to do with those emotions. Just my thought.
Right. No, that's a really good thoughts. I think it's a really good question to ask, is what Job's saying wrong? I don't think it is, but I do think that it subverts the theology of his friends. I think that there's an element that we're going to get into here that we see that they're a little bit, maybe even threatened by it. Like, and this is just, again, my analysis, and I welcome, other feedback that's not the same or the same, whatever. But his friends are hearing Job say something that, you know, you have to assume up to this point, they've kind of been in step on their thoughts on God and how God treats people and how God is just and how God is patient and loving. And he's not going to do this to people who are righteous. He's not just going to indiscriminately decide that righteous person, it's time for him to suffer. But now they're being confronted with the reality of that's either what's happening or Job did something wrong. So what am I going to choose? Am I going to choose to rethink my theology? Or am I going to think that I'm not ready to go there yet? Why don't we examine Job a little bit and see if maybe there's just something wrong with how he's seeing it? And I see the inclination to want to do that. I see that in myself. If I hear someone speaking something, even if they're having a lot of trouble in their life, if they're speaking something that I don't agree with, whether or not I have the wisdom to stay silent or speak up or navigate that whole waters, I feel a little bit of like, no, that's not quite right. You don't got that one right. You're off on that one. And I understand why you're off, because obviously you're dealing with it right now. But you're off on that. Yes, Britt.
That's
the point he's trying to make, is it may be, it may have been better for someone who's going to be evil throughout their entire life, they've never been born. And what he's saying is, I would rather not experience any of this. It would have been better for me, personally, to never have been born. And that's just a sign of the fact that it's not that he's hopeless, it's that he's hurting, and that's all it is. It's that he's hurting. He hasn't questioned any of his previous beliefs. He's just drawn what we would call a logical conclusion. When you're in pain, it would be better if you never experienced the pain. And that's what he's trying to say.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that you could read this in a way, and I think there's something to it, that Job is, he's not, like you say, calling God evil, but he is challenging God's design. He's saying, I know God created. I know God made light. God brought this existence into play. He created man. Obviously, he could have not created man, but he created man. But he brought them into the light so that they would live a number of days so that, I mean, for a number of reasons, but one of which they'll get into is that, you know, God tries and tests the man that he's created, I guess, to see what he's truly made of. And Job's saying, I don't want any of that. I don't want God's plan. It's better, in fact, for me to never have experienced that. Yeah, Kelly? Yeah, and, you know, I see Job wrestling with that a whole lot throughout this whole thing. I will kind of back up and just give you kind of a bigger picture idea of what I think is going on. I think that Job is speaking from the position of a man who has great faith. And when I read Job's responses as we go to his friends and the challenges that his friends give him, I see him not trying to justify his own righteousness, even though that's kind of what they accuse him of. But rather, I see him as saying, like, I want to ask God what's going on, because it's the problem isn't on my side. Something's going on the other side, and I just want to ask him what's going on. That's different than saying I have a right to approach him. You know what I mean? It's almost like a friend would say to another friend, like, I know Jehovah. I'm in this relationship with him, and I know him, and he's not acting like he normally acts. I just wish I had a chance to ask him about that. What's going on? That's kind of how I understand it. So I take Job's position to be that of a person who is arguing from the perspective of a very practical relationship with his God, not just an academic understanding of who God is. And I also see his Job's friends falling into more academic points and arguments. And although their points are not necessarily off in a lot of cases, there are assumptions there and a lack of practicality behind some of it. So we're going to try to flesh that out a little bit. I want to try to get into some of the imagery that we see here in Job chapter 3 so we can understand what he's talking about. One main image that really jumps out to me in Job chapter 3 is this contrast between light and darkness. Okay, darkness is discussed many, many times in this passage. and we see what darkness is associated with. Like in verse 4, let that day be darkness, may God above not seek it, nor light shine upon it. So darkness being associated with the idea of this is where God is not. This is where God's attention is not focused. You have in verse 5, gloom and deep darkness. Let gloom and deep darkness claim it. So darkness is gloomy and it's deep. And in verse 5 again, let clouds dwell upon it. You think about clouds, how they obscure the sun. They make things darker, right? So if you think of like the sun representing like God's attention, or even in a more abstract sense, it represents clarity because you can see something. Clouds obscure that, right? So there's obscurity in darkness. Verse 5 again, it says, let the blackness of day terrify it. So darkness, just in a general sense, is scary, right? Darkness is scary because we don't know what else is in the darkness because we can't see it. And he talks about thick darkness in verse 6, just to emphasize like how dark the darkness is that he's wanting. It says in verse 6, let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. You know, there's no order. It starts to get into like the idea of how darkness is without order. It's without rejoicing, but without order. And in verse 8, it talks about let those who curse it curse the day, who are ready to rouse up Leviathan. And, you know, a lot of the ancient Near East text scholars, when they see this Leviathan, that jumps out to them. Because to them, Leviathan is this sea creature that's used in other ancient Near East literature as well. And it's usually associated with some creature that represents chaos, because Leviathan is a terrible beast who lives in the ocean, and it kind of represents this idea of chaos. There's a lot that's been written about that, about how this monster in the sea represents chaos and disorder. And again, you think about like going back to Genesis chapter 1, what did God create from? Well, in our limited understanding and our ability to read what was scribed, he separated the waters from above from the waters that were below, right? He takes that which is formless and void and chaotic, and he creates order from it. This idea of these swirling, I mean, water to an ancient Near East person is something that you couldn't control. Like, you couldn't take it in your arms, right, and master it. You were at its mercy very much, but God was so powerful, he took what couldn't be controlled and he controlled it. And he made order out of it. That's one of the central themes that's in Genesis. And again, something that if you're comparing Jehovah to other false gods of the ancient Near East, is kind of in contrast to that. Because in a lot of those stories, you have these other gods who are formed from chaos, right? Their origins are chaotic. But God is not chaotic. He takes chaos and he brings it to order. So Job is saying, like, I don't know, he's kind of calling into mind here, darkness, chaos is where he would rather be. And in verse 9, he says, let the stars of its dawn be dark, let it hope for light, but have none, nor see the eyelids of the morning. And again, I can't help but read that from the perspective of, this is a man who's saying, like, there's really no hope. I don't know if he truly, like, completely abandoned every shred of hope that he had. And I don't think he did, because later on, when he's thinking about how he would like to approach God, it's the thought of that still terrifies him, which to me suggests he sees that there's still more that could happen. There's more reason to be scared. He hasn't truly lost everything. But I can't help but read hopelessness in this. So, you know, and you contrast that, and you go into verse 20 to the idea of light. In verse 20, why is light given to him who is in misery, and life to the bitter in soul? You see light and life there are balanced as representing one another, right? So why would Job be saying he wants things associated with darkness rather than light? It could just be simple as just read the text straight up. You just wish he hadn't been born, right? It could just be that simple. But there's reasons why he wishes he hadn't been born that go beyond his suffering that he himself points to. And I think one of the things he talks about is and he'll expand on this later, but he feels like he's under the microscope here. He feels like God has fixed his gaze on him and he will not relent. And that pressure is just too much. It's too much for Job. Yes. Yeah, and at great points, and that calls to mind something that I wanted to try to point out. It's not my intention in this discussion to try to show where Job is at fault. That's the job of his friends here in just a few chapters, right? But to try to help us understand the depths of suffering that he was experiencing. Can you imagine if you had lost all your children? How devastating that would be for those of you who have kids. How devastating that would be. But then to get to a point at some point after that to say, I wish I had never known them. Because that's what Job is saying. I wish none of this had ever happened. And that's pretty deep, yeah.
It's also this is messy because it's hitting the big questions as you've already brought up at the beginning of this. So this is reading between the lines. It's asking the question: why do bad things happen to good people? It's also confirming things like, in a sense, if I would have never been born, I would suffer from this. You're right. Even him getting kids back, they didn't replace his other one. It never took away that. So, in other words, there's some realities, there's some truth in what he's saying. I didn't ask people, you're wrong about that. I'm trying to explain that to someone. If I would have been born, I wouldn't have suffered this way. You're absolutely right. But you can't dodge those questions. Now, again, those who persevere, you know, yes, so that side is true. Would you rather not be with God, you know? But it's, in other words, it's not throwing a softball. This book is saying we're going to hit these deepest questions that you know are there. You know they're there. And there's even some truth behind the point. And how do we deal with this?
Right.
It's messy.
Yeah.
Which doesn't fit our perfect little box that we like to have in life. We like everything to be clearly defined, and it doesn't do that for us. But it's also refreshing because it's speaking. speaking to us.
Yeah, and I'm trying to draw out some, maybe not sympathy, that's maybe not the right word, but at least we can understand where Job's friends are going to come from too. Because again, if I were them, I would hear what Job is saying, and I would say, but Job, your wife, your kids, you're wishing you had never met them? Isn't that a little bit disrespectful to their legacy? You know, I mean, I can see myself disagreeing, at least initially, with what Job is saying here, and even feeling a little bit of indignation, like, man, I know you're going through it, but man, at least you're still here. But now what you're saying seems to disrespect those who aren't, your own family. Now you're saying you wish you'd never known them? That doesn't sound right. But we understand the depth of Job's suffering, and we see the difficulty that his friends are going to have in wrestling with some of the things he's saying here, because this really does subvert their understanding about how God operates. And even the most foundational things of the goodness of the relationships that we have in this life, that Job seems to be ready to just be saying, like, ah, throw it all out. I wish it never happened. Yeah, John? I agree with you.
I think that's, he's looking and he's saying, I don't know, I don't think I really deserve this. So why is this happening? So he's got this paradigm that's been shattered, which is probably the previous paradigm is probably similar to what his friend's paradigm was, which we mentioned before, that they were all kind of in sync, you know, up until this point when he starts to open his mouth, because his whole worldview has changed. And that's the thing about people is that everybody in this room has a different perspective on life. So for us to assume that we know what somebody else has been going through, I think is like it's just pride at its max. It's just assuming that we understand how people feel and maybe making judgments on how they, what they believe. But to appreciate the fact too that this is just a humble thing, just to realize that people are struggling with this stuff and trying to figure out who God is, trying to figure out how He works with people, how the world works. You know, if this is a good world that God created, then why are bad things happening? You got to figure these things out. You know, and especially when it gets so close to home. That's it. And another point that I wanted to make is that I think it's important too to remember what happened to Job and his family and his property, his assets. Some of the things were destroyed because from other people, but some of the things were from fire from heaven. Where's heaven? Who's in heaven? Well, God's in heaven. So that's where the fire came from. It came from God. So now I'm having to, now Job, that's just one of the things that Job is having to wrestle with in his mind, but it's also something that the friends are having to wrestle with in their minds. This is coming from God. Why else would he do this?
Yeah, and there's, to build on your point, there's some tension between what Job is experiencing and the call that we have, each of us, to understand truth and to defend truth. Because from the perspective of Job's friends, Job isn't speaking what they've come to know as truth. So how do you balance that? I mean, that takes a lot of wisdom to do that. We're out of time, unfortunately. A couple of things I just wanted to draw your attention to that we won't get into. But we talked about some of the different poetic devices that exist throughout the book of Job. And you have some really good irony in verses 13 through 15. The idea of these kings that build up ruins, like, well, what's going to happen to them, right? I mean, what they build up is going to be ruined again. And you have almost this ecclesiastical idea of all being vanity, you know, cyclical and vain, all these things that happen in life. And then I want you to try to, if you haven't already, read through chapter 3 again and look for things that points to the fact that Job doesn't feel free and how he wishes he could die, but literally can't. And I wonder if maybe this idea that God told the Satan, you're not allowed to kill him, was actually preserving his life supernaturally. That he wanted to die, but he literally could not die. It's an interesting thought. You know, either the thought of suicide never crossed Job's mind, but that doesn't sound like that's what's going on here. It sounds like he's thought of like, I wish I could die, and I wish I could think of a way to die, but I can't. It almost seems like when God tells the Satan you're not allowed to kill him, we're like, okay, good, well, at least he's got that. And that's actually ended up being more suffering for Job, that he can't just die. So there's some irony there too, right? So we'll get into chapter 4 next week. We'll look at Eliphaz's response to Job's first statement. And thank you for your good comments and questions.